recognize any, internet protocol from any desk. Mm-hmm. And so it's not just all on one desk, like Scott's computer. So, I want to have more than one person be able to, unless they have to be able to do whatever's doing the programming. If it's just an update or if it's just like a file, maybe something, want to schedule something. It shouldn't just be one guy. So we need more connectivity, but we don't want to run all of their scanning softwares and their antivirus softwares to bog down video editing. So we really just want particular kinds of ports open for particular kinds of communications here and there. And we tried to get them to just firewall off our system. And, you know, we're not excited about being attached to their system either, you know, because right now we have a pretty secure thing we don't have to worry about. But as soon as we're connected to them, then we have to worry about something getting through. But that's a long-winded explanation.
Good morning, dude. Mark's live. I think I saw
outside Carl's house.
Yeah, I saw you driving away. Next. All right. Carl's good, isn't he?
He's a great
interview. He's Mr. TV. He even has his own lights. That's great. Come down to my studio.
Yeah, I've done one out on this porch. And it's too hot. Let's see what else.
He's got his love of lights. I've used that little room a lot. There's a little room around the corner here too. I don't know if you've ever used that one. I think a lot of council people like to use that.
Yeah, just looking at Ian Hawks.
Yeah.
He's not here. He's helped me through a lot of stuff.
He's a good soundbite. I've been over at his house too. Caught him doing yard work in his shorts. And I said, I'll just shoot you from the neck up. He goes, okay.
he's a guy. He helps out a lot of journalism students.
Yeah, very patient.
Mm-hmm. How you doing?
I'm good. I have most of my coffee. Let's go to the morning.
Very
That's a pretty rare thing, so
I appreciate it.
Computer models don't show that.
Yeah.
Well, the heck, look out the window.
You know, I've seen that. Well, we had a good little.
No, that would be the last of the other day.
San Francisco green screen, the graphic to the little town.
Yeah. I saw it then, but now I feel like.
Take a look outside.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, well, it is dark.
Yeah, it's pitch dark. That's pretty funny.
Just want to see if you guys are really getting that. Is it okay? All right.
Thank you.
That would be if I liked the shop. Then I'd
Okay, I'm a 4 year old. by then I saw about all of the sports.
Right.
Good morning. Thank you for coming. It's that time of year where I get to do the second major task outlined in the charter for me. First is the state of the city. The second is delivering the proposed budget. I'd like to thank Councilmember Scala for coming this morning, our VIP in the room, and all the staff, and guests, and even the press. Thank you for coming. This is a, I think, a 20 or 25 slideshow to overview the budget. It's absolutely an overview. It doesn't have every detail, but we'll tell you by the end how to get it, where it is, and then take Q&A. This has been a particularly difficult year to balance the budget. I'll go into some detail about that as we go through. But the big picture, the city is in this budget proposing to spend a total of a little under $441 million next year. That's about $14 million less than last year. Now you'll see that there's only a little under $420 million in revenues. But that's okay. The general fund is balanced. And in the utilities, it's very common for us to save money up over the years and then do a big project in 1 year. And that's what creates this disconnect between revenue and expenditures. So these are totals, not the general fund. General fund's included. This budget does propose to add 27 full-time equivalent positions. That would take us to 1,481 employees, or 1,196 per thousand, which, as you can see on the chart, is keeping pace with the community. So it's about exactly the same as last year. The thing I want to point out about the chart that I think is cause for continued concern is the dark part of the bar versus the light part of the bar. The dark part of the bar is the general fund. It is at an all-time low. Every year we reach a new all-time low when it comes to staffing compared to the size of the city. The utilities are keeping pace, and that's a good thing. So I'm going to continue to talk about the internet and what it's doing to our income and what that means to the services we provide. So this year, as we began to prepare the budget, we confronted a lot of challenges. I'm going to talk about them a little bit. The first one is the biggest challenge. We have had, in our history, this is our lowest sales tax growth year in our history, except for the Great Recession. So to put it another way, if you look at our revenue history, we have never had less than 3% growth in sales tax, except for 2 years in the recession. So it's a pretty safe bet to say 3%. It's very conservative. There's a lot of track record on that. What we saw this year was 1%. So we had to cut the budget. We saw this happening early. We were 3 months into the budget when we saw it. We made some changes to reduce our spend and make it through the year. So we will make it through this current year. But the difficulty is we have to then reduce next year's budget, too, to match the revenue we have, not the revenue we expected. So we did that, and we did that by cutting the budget. And I'll talk about all the techniques we used to reduce our spend for next year. While that happened, while revenue didn't come in as we have always seen it come in, healthcare costs have risen significantly, and the Affordable Care Act has had its impact on cost. We believe the Affordable Care Act has done very good things for the social side of our employee base. There are people who have insurance now who didn't before, but there is a cost to it, and so we still wrestle with those costs. The other remarkably expensive thing is pharmaceuticals. The cost of these have skyrocketed. And it's not just for us. This is a national phenomenon. We are struggling with what to do to try to reduce our expenditure and our use of those. But at this point, we simply have to find the money to pay for it. So we are self-insured. That means we, the employees, pay for we, the employees. The city government contributes some, but not all. And it's not an insurance company that's taking that risk through premiums and payments. So you can see there claims were up by more than a million, pharmaceuticals costs were up, and we have to offer health care to more employees with the ACA. So all those things acted to create quite a hurdle. So less revenue, a lot more expense. Then the federal government changed overtime rules. I think everyone's familiar with this by now. It's hard to judge what the cost will be on that, but we have to pay overtime for a lot more folks than we used to, and there's no money, right? So the only way to manage that is to not have them work the overtime or to flex their schedule. So if you work, we have 609 meetings at night in 1 year. We do a lot of overtime. So to get around that, we will do the work, and then we'll give them the day off the next day, or the hours, equivalent hours. That's our techniques we're going to use to work through this and try to avoid the cost. Occasionally, we're going to have to pay the cost. So we don't have a way to estimate this impact at this point. Other challenges, we have had two major grants end. One was for firefighters. This budget does pick up the cost for those firefighters, so they're not going anywhere. We're going to keep them. And the Missouri Department of Transportation has decided to stop a program it has done for decades called the STP funding grant. That's $350,000 a year that we have relied on and programmed into the capital budget. So we will be doing work to figure out how to handle our projects without this funding source. And if the list wasn't long enough, we have another hit. There were no savings from 15 that we can use to shore up some of the holes we have. So that is quite a headwind when you start the process to create the budget. That's enough problems for any budget office or city manager to deal with. But I'm very proud to say we have dealt with them, and we are going to present a balanced budget. But we didn't do it without pain. We have some goals that really guide us through it. So with all those problems to deal with, we made a list of goals that we wanted to accomplish with the budget. First was, obviously, we want to live within our means. We want to balance the general fund. We want to avoid laying anyone off. It's the worst thing you can do for a family, right? And it actually, if you do that, it creates a bigger problem for us, a bigger revenue problem, because then an entire family is taken out of the economy. We wanted to provide a raise if we could, and we were able to achieve a very modest one. And then we also want to make progress on the strategic plan. We care deeply about it. The council's done an amazing job with this strategic plan, and we want to implement it. It's hard to do without resources, but we have some pretty interesting ideas, I think, that will move the needle and not cost a lot. So those were our goals. Here's how we keep the general fund balanced with all of those problems. We're not going to buy any cars or trucks or big pieces of equipment, right? We have a replacement plan where we buy a little bit each year rather than one at a time just to keep the cost impact down. But that's something we can do. We push that out. We're not going to replace anything this year. So staff will have to, push that equipment one more year. We kept a little bit for those pieces of equipment that aren't going to make it one more year. But in general, we're not replacing funds. That was about a $1.1 million deferred expense, so that helps us for next year. We can't do this forever. It's a temporary fix. We could do it for one or two years at the most, and I hope we won't have to do it next year. We're going to continue our hiring delay. That's one of the techniques we use to balance the budget in the current year. The council changed the policy, and we do not have police and fire have to do this. And so we're going to continue that policy where, except for police and fire, when a job opens, we will keep it open for 45 days before we start to refill. That creates about $200,000 in savings in a typical year. We refinanced the debt on City Hall, so we came up with lowered our expenditures by $260,000 every year. Thank you, Michelle Nix and Finance Department, for great work there. I never thought I'd live to see the day when interest rates were lower than 2%, but we've seen them. And then we took $1 million in departmental budget cuts. So that's how we balanced the general fund. And that was literally nickel and diming every account. So there's no major cuts to announce. It's everything got cut by a little bit. So there's other actions we're proposing in the budget. One is to change our policy about the recovery of building inspection fees. Right now, it's our goal is to recover 75% of the cost. We're proposing to council to increase that to recover 100% of the cost of the building inspection from the folks that come ask for the building inspection. So that would be a $1 per $1,000 of value of the construction increase. That's the way that fee is constructed. It's a cost per $1,000 of value. So we're proposing adding $1. That would take us to the 100%. We are also on the healthcare side. We have three plans employees can choose from. There's one that's the most expensive, there's the middle ground, and then there's the most affordable. We're going to close the most expensive plan to new enrollees. So if you're already in the plan, you can stay in it. We're not kicking anyone out of a healthcare plan, but we are going to try to stop the bleeding financially by closing it to new enrollees. In the general fund, we started the year saying no new staff. We got to not increase our spend. We were able to, through a budget neutral method, find enough money to add three police officers and one position in economic development to focus on our entrepreneurism. All that is within the budget we already have. So we didn't increase the spend, but we increased the employee count that way. And I'll go into more detail about how we manage the economic development position. It's really funds that became available there if we move the airport to that department. I'll get to that in a minute. Other important considerations. We have two propositions next week, I think, or 2 weeks from now. And Prop 1 is the lodging tax. This budget is balanced. Whether or not that passes, all that will do is decide whether we build the terminal or not. Proposition 2 is a sales tax on vehicles that are purchased outside of the state of Missouri. That's an interesting question on the ballot. If it passes, we keep doing what we are doing. It's not an increase in tax, it's just continuing one on a very small niche of transactions. But it does add up. It's about $500,000 to the city government. So if it doesn't pass, there's more time that we will be able to continue charging before it expires, and we may be able to ask the voters again. The other thing to point out, it's not all gloom and doom. We do have strong bond ratings. We're still AA rated in all of our utilities. I'm going to focus on the utilities cost and then move into other topics. I'm going to go through this somewhat quickly because you're going to get a copy of this. We every year try to minimize the increase of our utilities. We know it's a hardship for some families. So it's always very low. It's 1 and 2% if we can do it. We go many years by skipping, too. So last year, for example, I don't think we had any increase in electricity, if I remember right. So this year, we're proposing a 2% increase in the operating rate for electric, 2% in water, and we still compare very favorably when you do the benchmarks to other cities. The sewer, we're proposing a 1% operating rate increase, but the voters have already approved a 4%, so that would be 5% for sewer. Again, even with that, we compare very favorably to our neighbors. And stormwater, a big percentage increase on a very tiny fee. But this is voter approved. It's a 25% increase. And you can see the chart there. We'll move from $1.80 up to $3.37 over that period of time. So that was a ballot last year. The solid waste has no increase, and the total impact of all of those utilities is about $3.59 on the average household. Want to hit pension. No budget presentation will be complete without talking about pensions. You see that red bar there in 13. That was the year we reached our low point in funding and out of control costs. So we made a lot of changes in 13. In partnership with staff, council, and the financial institutions that we work with. And we've turned the corner. You can see all funds are becoming healthier. The loggers general, loggers utilities have reached the line where they're considered healthy, and we still have a way to go with police and fire, but we are headed in the right direction. You may remember last year the council took $5 million from general fund reserves, put them into the police and fire pensions. That's why it jumped in 1 year, 3% in fire and 4% in police. Okay. You're going to get tired of hearing me talk about sales tax erosion. You know, we built this system of relying on sales tax in an era that didn't have the internet and didn't have the massive federal subsidy of the internet, subsidy made by not charging sales tax on internet transactions. We continue to see large losses to that. So have to point out that it's about $10 million this year that we are not receiving that we would have if the federal government wasn't subsidizing Amazon. There is a bill at the federal level that would equal the playing field, would have online retailers pay the same sales tax as brick-and-mortar retailers, the mom-and-pop shops in town. It hasn't moved very far, but we are hopeful it will gain some support over time because we are not the only city in this mess. That subsidy of Amazon has had a direct reduction in funding for police, roads, the bus system, the airport, parks, streets, sidewalks, everything we care about in the city. Okay. The most important point then is how do we make progress on our most important goals with all of that to wrestle with? Well, we have a few ideas. Our number one goal in the strategic plan, our first strategic priority is to create jobs that support families, living wage jobs. So we're obviously going to continue the Economic Development Department. and we're going to continue our work on entrepreneurship and startups, and that, thus that position we talked about earlier. We're going to continue our work. Jim Witt is doing so well to widen the opportunities that minority and women-owned businesses have. We're going to do that primarily by reducing the barriers that we put up, quite frankly, unknowingly, to work with us. So when we charge $3 million or make you get $3 million of insurance to get a contract with us, I certainly see the value of that if you're building a road. But if you're doing 10 feet of sidewalk, maybe that's overkill. So we're getting very precise about the need for that sort of coverage based on what we're really buying. That will help small businesses actually get contracts with us. That's one example. We also want to continue to support the mechatronics certificate and degree program. This is a great success story of partnership. We had our manufacturers in town, 3M and others, come to us and say, hey, we cannot find people to hire locally that have enough math and engineering skills to operate our very advanced machinery. So we approached Moberly Area Community College to say, would you be willing to risk financial risk, you know, for an institution to create a curriculum to produce this kind of an applicant? And they did it, and it's working beautifully. We're now a couple years into this process, and all of our local manufacturers have been able to hire folks out of the mechatronics program. So if you're looking for an investment in your future, I recommend mechatronics at MAC. We want to continue our funding of the CARE program. This is where we pay the salary of young folks who want to experience working and maybe come from a very poor background. And we're going to do something new there. So we're going to continue that program. It's really a brilliant program. If you're a small business owner or a large business owner, we will send you a free employee. We'll pay their salary. And it's generally in the summer, although we have programs year-round. And what we're going to do as a city then, this is one of those brilliant ideas that doesn't cost us anything more, but it increases the impact of care. We're going to create in three spots. We're going to use the budget we already have, our temporary budget. We're going to commit to 2 years worth of funding for an apprentice. So we're going to hire folks out of care, bring them into our business units, and try to teach them our work. So that we look forward to getting linemen out of this approach. And so it's we're very hopeful this will move us forward. Once again, creating jobs that support families, and this way targeting them to the neighborhoods that need them the most. The airport. In August, the voters are being asked to approve a 1% increase in the lodging tax to help fund the new terminal. This budget is the operating side of that, so the operating budget will continue. If that passes, we'll begin the work to build a new terminal. If it doesn't, we will wait some more. We've waited 50 years. So the other point about the airport, and I'll cover this in a little bit, I am recommending that we move it organizationally from Public Works. It's always been a division of the Public Works Department. I'm going to move it to the Economic Development Department. And that's really a reflection of two things. One is just embracing this vision that it's really an economic development driver. It's an economic asset to the community. It's not just a facility to operate. So we're rethinking our approach on it. Two, we happen to have a remarkable person, Stacy Button, who has great experience operating an airport and has done everything we have planned to do. So she's the right person to take the reins over the next 5-10 years to help, you know, really up our game at the airport. And that's including federal grants, as well as more air service, as well as a new terminal. That move is what frees up enough money in the general fund to create that job we're talking about, to focus on startups, entrepreneurism. and we're going to focus that attention on the neighborhoods of the strategic plan. So a double win there. Social equity, improving the odds for success for everyone in the community. This budget continues the funding for Glenn Cobbins and Judy Hubbard. They are pictured below. It continues the funding for Dr. Carl Kenny and Jim Witt. They are under contract. Glenn and Judy are employees. And then this budget also continues our focus on creating community events where we can in those neighborhoods so that we can increase the sense of neighborhood, help people feel safer because they know everyone in the neighborhood. We're going to continue our social service funding. This is almost $900,000 that we have traditionally used in the health department. They buy services with that money in very diverse set of services provided. You can see them here, emergency shelters, job skill programming, substance abuse treatment, etc. We're going to continue our summer lunch program, which is going on right now at Douglas Park. So if you're struggling to find food, you can get it at Douglas Park. That's a great partnership we have with the Voluntary Action Center and the public schools. We're going to increase our sustainability efforts in the planned neighborhoods. So the budget also includes an expenditure here where we're going to help folks that have very high utility bills. This is one of the things we really struggle with because there's no innate incentive for anyone in this picture to invest in energy efficiency. What I'm talking about is really old housing that is a rental. So the owner doesn't pay the bill, and they're not generally, some are very good about this, but generally speaking, they don't have an incentive to make an investment in the house because they never get the return. Right, the return goes to the renter. The renter can't afford to make the investment in the house. And why would I invest in their house? You know, so there's this weird mutually exclusive set of incentives that mean we have a significant number of folks in our strategic plan neighborhoods who have very low rent costs and obscenely high utility costs. So I met a person that had $300 rent and $800 electric bill. Well, that's something we want to change. So the sustainability office is going to focus on how to do that. This budget also continues funding for CAT television, Columbia Access Television. This is the public access television. I'm repeatedly asked, is that public television? No, it's different. There's really four. So this is the public access where anyone can participate, become a member, learn how to use the video equipment, and then air their creative work products on that station. It is not PBS. So and it's not the city channel. Public safety. Public safety funding is right now with this budget $40 million of the $60 million that the city council has in discretionary funding. So $2 out of $3 is dedicated to public safety. Of that $40 million, $700,000 is being focused on community policing. That's the six officers and the sergeant. And this budget also adds three police officers. That does keep the police department in relative parity with the growth of the city. All of the other departments are losing ground regarding the growth of the city. We are also doing some really important things on the policing side on the capital budget. So we're decentralizing our physical locations. We already use the Boone Community Center as a substation in the central neighborhood. And what that means is our officers stop in there and fill out reports. They meet community members there. It's a place we go often to sometimes cool off on hot days like this and to do our paperwork, which is an integral part of the work. The last capital ballot had a project in it that we are designing now and will build in 18 and 19, the north side, a police station. So there'll be a building in the second ward up on off of Rangeline. And then we are leasing. This is kind of exciting. We're leasing in the third ward space, a townhome in the East neighborhood near Indian Hills Park, where we will also use that to, like we do the Boone Community Center. It'll be a substation. It'll be a place for meetings to be had with our community police officers and create a presence in the third ward. And then, of course, accreditation. This is a goal we've been working toward for many years in police and fire. They are both getting very close to achieving accreditation. It is the finest external validation that you are using best practice in your field. We're very proud of the Public Works Department. They were the first. They've been reaccredited four times. Many of the things they do are now included in and made a aspirational goal for other folks all over the world if they want to be accredited. So it's a powerful tool to improve our operational excellence. Infrastructure. We've done an amazing amount of work in this space in the last couple years. We've had five infrastructure ballots pass in the past 2 years. That's a lot of ballot questions. So it's parks, electric, water, stormwater, streets and sidewalk projects. I'm going to go through some of the infrastructure just to give you a sense of what we're going to be focused on this year. Electric, obviously, we've got to deal with the transmission line project. But probably more importantly, we have to construct that substation that we're calling Mill Creek. It's down there near Mill Creek. And we're really focused on cleaning up Moore's Lake up at our generation facility. I'm excited about that. Now that we no longer burn coal, we can make that the pristine lake it was. Sewer, obviously, big change in the last ballot where we moved from 80% expansion to 80% maintenance of our system. So we're going to continue that work, a lot of sewer lining projects, and we're going to continue to replace the sewers that really need that. So Flat Branch is a good example there. In the water utility, we're just going to focus on maintaining the system, right? So a lot of water meter replacements, and we're going to relocate some mains as we coordinate road projects. Solid waste, we're still working on the creation of our sixth landfill cell, and we're going to build a wetland around the landfills to keep any leaching elements from reaching the creek. So it's an effort to keep any landfill waste from the creek. Parks, I think everyone knows about the field house. I love this because CVB is helping. There's $1 million from them to help build the sports field house. We know that sports is a great investment in tourism, and this is an example of where we're working together to make that happen. We're going to continue work on the Clark Lane West Hinkson Pedway, and we're going to increase the green space with a Gates Park addition. We have a lot of streets and sidewalk projects. Here are some we're going to focus on. The widening project, this was in the capital ballot, Nifong from Providence to Forum. This is one we have to deal with that STP grant going away. That was part of the funding for this project. So we've got to circle the wagons on that, but this initial work is really planning and design. So we can afford that. We have to deal with how to build it later. Intersection improvement Forum and Green Meadows, whatever form that takes, whether it's a roundabout or not, we'll decide. That's the difficult questions that council gets to wrestle with, but there is an improvement project in the works. Oakland Gravel Road sidewalk, and then repairs to the Greenbrier Trail. Transit, this is pretty exciting. The council has accelerated the bus shelters, so we're going to get a great start on that this year, and then the five diesel buses will be replaced with electric buses. Amazingly enough, this technology is finally real. You know, we've heard about it a long time. It never quite worked out. It wasn't enough horsepower, didn't last long enough in the day. People kept working on it, and the new buses, new electric buses, are amazing. They last all day. They charge overnight. They have plenty of oomph. In fact, they have to tamp down a little bit on the power. And they're so clean. They cost a lot less to operate as well. So all the savings that the bus produces, we're going to put into staff time to run more routes more frequently. So it's a great win-win. Investing in a capital expenditure that reduces your operating spend is always something I get very excited about. Regarding the strategic plan, we're going to distribute bus passes in our strategic plan neighborhood in an effort to really introduce folks who maybe haven't done it, or, you know, it is confusing. I don't know if you've ever looked at the schedule. I have to have help figuring out the schedule. And that's just the nature of transit systems. So we're going to walk people through it. We're going to give them the pass, try to get them to try it, because we know that if you commit to transit, you can significantly reduce the expenses you have in a year for transportation, which can only help family incomes. We also are creating 5 full-time drivers by reducing the temporary driver budget. So this we did a couple years ago. It's worked very well. We're going to do it again. This might be about the last time we can do it, but we believe this will be a great operational improvement for the transit system. With parking, there's a lot of projects there. I'm not going to read them all to you, but really want to focus on the app there. Park Mobile is something we'll be asking to spread wider. It's a very easy way to pay for parking. You can do it on your phone, and it works brilliantly. So if you need more time, it'll buzz you in the restaurant or the bookstore, and you can just hit a button and have more time. You don't have to go back to your car, stuff the meter, or risk the ticket. The other thing I'll point out is we are, over time, going to implement the automatic ARM payment systems in all of our garages. So they'll all work the same way, and you'll just pay when you leave. It's wonderful. It's easy, and that's how every other parking garage in America works, so it'll be nice for our visitors. Stormwater. Obviously, we're going to continue to focus on these problems. We have a little more funding, thanks to the voters, and we have plenty of ways to spend it, and as you can see there. I do want to point out on the operational excellence piece, this is the 5th major goal of the strategic plan. We've measured this 8 ways from Sunday, and what we know is this. Our city employees are very engaged. We're twice as engaged as the private sector. Gallup does a survey every year about how engaged people are in the workplace, and they survey every industry. And the best year, the most engaged we've ever been in the country, is about 34% of the workforce saying, I'm in, I love this place, and I'm working hard. 34%. We're 72. So we rock. And we rock because we hire people that care about the mission of the city. And serving other people is an inspiring mission, right? Most folks really do get motivated by that calling. So because they're engaged and they're in, they do a great job. Our customer service scores are the envy of the region and the country. We're 20% higher, and I don't mean just 20% of them. We're 20 points higher than the nation when you ask about customer service. We're at 70%. The best they can do is 50%. So our engaged employees have this result. Accreditation, we're going to still keep focusing on that. We're very proud of all of these departments that are already accredited. You can see on the slide, and we're going to really focus on police and fire in the next year. It may take them a couple years, but we're going to make significant progress in 17. The other thing we're going to do to up our game is recognize and eliminate bias where we find it. This is kind of a new area of thinking in the country, but we're catching up to it. We've kind of been woken up to it. Whether it's white privilege you'll hear people talk about, or just racial bias or other kinds of bias, think we all have those things. There's just patterns of way of thinking. And so we're going to run employees through it. Every police officer is going to complete the training. That's included in this budget. So fair and impartial policing. I'm very pleased to report great progress with the contact center. So pleased that for the first time, we're putting in big numbers the number. We started slowly, we did it subtly, and we wanted to make sure we got it right before we advertised. And so it is finally ready for prime time. And I'm very pleased to announce that the number is 874-CITY. So we're trying to get to three phone numbers in the phone book. We had 154 numbers in the phone book. We're down to about 70 some odd, and it's nice to be able to stop paying for those. And so what we want to get to is 911 for emergencies. We want the phone number for text for folks that need help to use the telephone, can't use the telephone. And then this one, so three numbers. And you don't have to know who to talk to. They'll help you, and they'll have the right answer to your question. So they're covering about half the services we provide right now. Pretty amazing. The other thing we're going to do, we're going to centralize public information officers and the GIS department. I think we've talked a lot about that, and I won't spend a lot of time on it. I'm going to spend a little time on this one. In this budget, I'm proposing that we change our approach on mechanical, plumbing, and electric licensing. There is a way to do it faster, better, and that's by making it administrative. So rather than waiting for the board to meet, and maybe there's a quorum and maybe there's not, so you wait another month. You could come in 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, take the test. If you pass, you get the license. And if you don't pass or the administrator says no, you can appeal. In this case, I'm proposing to the Building Construction Codes Council. So I think that would be a much better service provision to the public and to those industries, and I'm recommending it in the budget. There are some pay and benefit changes included in the budget. Very proud to be able to say we managed to squeeze a raise out of all this mess, and it's not a huge raise. It's 25 cents per hour across the board, so that's $500 a year for every employee. I feel pretty strongly about doing flat rate raises when there's not much money to spend. Because it puts the majority of the funding into the hands of the lowest paid positions. I think that's important when you don't have a lot to spend. We are going to do annual physicals for the fire department and begin providing biannual physicals to everyone who has a CDL or is required to have a CDL in their job. This was something that the fire department asked for in the meet and confer process. It does cost a little bit. But it really is important. It will help catch disease early and other things, keep us healthy. Of course, there was a 13.8% increase in the health care costs, so that's another thing we've dealt with in the year. You'll be happy to know I'm done. I will tell you where you can find it. It's on the web at como.gov. We will have two printed copies, one in the clerk's office, one in the finance department. And there are going to be four public sessions, three where the public can participate, and the fourth is a council work session that's open to the public to observe. So Monday, August 15th is the first public hearing at the regular city council meeting. It will be discussed. No decisions made, but it will be discussed. So there's already an amendment sheet on the budget, by the way. I'm pretty amused by this. I think it's fascinating. Our council has amended the budget before they had it, so it's kind of a fun thing. So we're delivering an amendment sheet with the budget this time. So that's the kind of thing that'll be discussed about where to move money, how much, etc. August 20th, we're going to have an all-day session. That's the work session in this. That's a Saturday, so you're all invited. You might have better things to do, but you're welcome to come in and cool off and listen to us waffle on about numbers. September 6th and the 19th are the second and third public hearings. So again, no decisions made until the 19th. That's where the vote gets taken. And by then, we ought to have all of the amendments hashed out and agreed to. Okay. I'm going to, that's the last one. So I would take any questions you have. Caitlin.
You said that you plan to continue funding for Three Falls, the Three Falls of the City Highway Care, the strategic plan. First question, do you know off the top of your head how much that will be?
Well, we've so there's a complicated answer there. Of the four folks, two of them are through contracts. So those contracts are already paid for, basically, but they'll last through the year. Two of the folks are temporary employees, so I think that cost is somewhere in the $25,000 to $30,000 range for the year.
Last year when this was hired them, you talked a bit about disparities in unemployment and employment opportunities and other things. And what exactly have those individuals accomplished in the past year? If you don't know what you can.
I would love to. Thank you. Yes. So Caitlin asked me to go into detail about what those two individuals do. What did they accomplish? Thanks for asking. I could talk about this for a long time, and I appreciate the opportunity to do it. They inspire me a great deal. I'll tell you about their typical day. If you look back at the state of the city, I mentioned some of the stories there, but Glenn and Judy have been a team for, I think, 20 years doing this work in Columbia. And, you know, sometimes karma works out. Their center lost funding and closed. At the same time, we took on our social equity challenge. And I met them and was so impressed. And they graciously agreed to bring that talent to us. And so what that talent is, how the form it takes is they go door to door in our neighborhoods. They're focused right now on the central neighborhood, but they'll work on the second and third wards too. Now, door to door is tough business. You can ask any council member how tough that is, how surprising some of the receptions are you get. But Glenn and Judy, you know, in the first ward, everybody knows them, and most people know them in the second, third ward. And so they tend to be welcomed into the house. And what they're doing is just having conversations. Now, why is that important? Well, we think we know. So all of our data is federal government surveys, our survey. It's all this conglomerated data. But what goes missing there is you have an absolute inability to know how to fix a problem. You can't target a program at those big numbers and hit the mark, right, very easily, because you don't know who needs that help, who needs that help from this program and this program. So what we do in the government generally is just sort of carpet bomb the community with programs, and hopefully the people that need them find them. Well, there's a massive disconnect in right there, right, that one piece, the people that need it finding the actual program. So that's what they do. They go in, they triage the household. If they don't need any help, great. Move on to the next house. But here's a typical day for them. Walk up to a house in the first ward and get to know the person living there. They're invited in. They have a seat. They scan the environment and find that there's not any food in this house. Nothing in the pantries, nothing in the fridge. So while they're talking to them, Judy will notice that generally. They'll be talking to the person in the house. Glenn will call the food bank, and before they leave, there's a food delivery made. And they tell them, hey, did you know about the food bank? Here's the phone number. Here's how you can get more food if you're in these kind of straits again. Glenn has probably fixed more television sets. So they're there to help folks in any way they need. And he does seem to get put to work on the little house mending things that I'm so far behind on too. But so it's just this work of love of going around to each family and trying to make them aware of programs they may not have heard of before. And you'd be amazed how many people, no food in the fridge, don't know the food bank is so close and that they can go anytime they need it. So that's powerful stuff. They give them access to the transit system, right? They show them how to use it. They give them a bus pass. They talk to them about Medicaid and, you know, other things that can really improve their life. So that's an example. I'll stop myself from giving you 18 more. Other questions?
Mike, I wanted to ask you about adding 3 police officers this coming proposed budget. I talked to Mayor Treese, and he wants to add 4 additional officers as well. So would that be a total of 7, or is this 3 part of that 4 under the mayor's proposal?
The 3 is part of the 4, and that's an example where that's an amendment to the budget, right? So we were able to, through our normal process, find 3, which keeps us, you know, in parity with the population growth. The mayor would like that to be 4, so he's made that amendment. That'll get discussed at council, and if it passes, it'll become the budget. So I don't think it's a total of 7. It's a total of 4.
As we move forward into the next budget, too, a lot of people are concerned about the leadership of the police department. Can you tell the people of Columbia where we're at with the police chief right now?
Well, there appears to be a possibility for litigation there, so I will not comment.
Steve. I remember you saying in the past that a budget is a list of priorities or values. I think that's a good way of putting it. As we look back, maybe human history, the purpose that governments were formed were primarily public safety. The discussion whether 3 or 4 officers to add is a very minor difference there when the police chief and et cetera say that we're short perhaps dozens. They have difficulty responding to 911 calls. I hear the traffic units significantly cut back. We have a lot of other things that you're dealing with. You've made some decisions that aren't very fun, but I think there's still some harder decisions that could be made. My good friend Mike's here, and we discussed about the parks tax last time, but there's also general funding for the parks operations, I understand. About $5.7 million, if I recall from last time. And it's just for instance, there's other things in the general fund that could be reallocated to police.
Yes.
What about these hard decisions? Because, you know, if the city doesn't provide public safety, why does it exist?
Well, you make a great point, and I'll elaborate on that a little bit. Those are incredibly difficult decisions to make because right now public safety is obviously the first priority of the council. 2 out of $3 that they have to spend on everything. You boil it down to $3, 2 of them are dedicated to police and fire. So the other dollar pays for everything else. Okay? So let that sink in for a minute. Everything else, $1, police and fire get 2. So if you say, why don't you kill off everything else and fund police and fire, that's absolutely a valid exercise to go through. The difficulty comes, the pain comes when you pick the loser, right? And so the point is that money's not sitting on a shelf. It's being used. It provides pools in the poorest parts of town. Should we shut those down to get cops? That's a tough decision for councils to make. That's the balancing act they have to wrestle with every year. Now, you could say, well, we're just going to cut the parks budget by $1 million and move that. But then Mike has to make a decision, and the council has to know what it's going to be, right? They want to know, hey, I didn't want you to close the pools. I just wanted $1 million. Well, Mike's got, well, do I shut down Stevens Lake Park? That saves money. You know, these are the kind of choices that are the real impacts of that thinking. So what we're going to do, if that becomes an exercise, is lay out exactly what the money buys so that the whole community and the council knows here's the real cost of moving the money. That's why it's difficult. That's why it's painful. A lot of folks assume anything not in public safety is wasteful spending. I've heard that from a number of folks. But I don't think so. You know, when I look at it, we've gone through so many years of budget cuts and the recession. I don't see any fluff. Now, based on your political view, you might view pools as fluff. We don't. We view them as important investments in critical parts of the city. So that's an example of how difficult that is. You're right to say it's difficult. And
council, I'm going to cross over, but you know, how to define it, say, an austere budget year, what's a primary priority, and what's, you know, certainly good and beneficial, but secondary in the grand scheme of things?
Yeah.
Are those ranked?
Sure. We do that all the time, have for decades. And so what you find is decisions like this year where, you know, how did we come up with the three officers when there's no money to do it? We look at the survey and we say, what does the community say is most important and what's least important? And if we're going to reallocate money, and that's exactly the thought process we went through, exactly what you're talking about. We said, what's the least painful cut to make somewhere so we can move it over? So we cut it from, this budget proposes reducing a funding source for streets, for street maintenance, to put it into police, because that is the change in the survey we've seen over the last 3 years. It used to be roads were by far the most important to the community, by far, and then public safety came in second, still very important, but a significant number two. That's flipped. Now police is far more important than roads. So what we're trying to reflect is that change in public sentiment and say, okay, we'll move, we'll respond to that, and we'll move some money from streets to put it into public safety. So we are doing that very thing, and we do it every year. Yes?
So I was really interested to see that in operational excellence there is that recognizing and eliminating bias section.
Yeah.
So is that, especially if you had all sworn CPD officers will complete this training, is that something that came about this week after all of the tension that happened, like a city council, or is that something that was thought of before?
I'm glad you asked that. We've been working on this for years now, and so the health department has four, well, they have three, the city government has four certified trainers in building inclusive communities, recognizing bias, race impact, and how our race relations are still a struggle that we have in this country. So we've been doing that training for a number of years. We were talking about getting everyone in police trained months and months ago. So it is not a response to anything that happened this week. This was in the draft budget from the first draft, so which happens a long time ago, 6 months ago or so, on the staff side. So it's something we have cared about and are working on.
So, but an effort that's going to be maybe ramped up now in light of, I mean, it nationwide in light of those kind of tensions.
Sure. Yes, I mean, we're absolutely concerned. It's tragic what is happening in America right now. And we worry about our cops every day. Everyone in the city is chewing their nails and worried about those folks. So we are supportive of them, and we're going to provide this training because, quite frankly, this can help improve safety for our officers, right? I won't go into a lot of detail on, you know, the cause of shootings and the hatred of police and vice versa. But having good relationships with the community is the only way through that. Yes?
What exactly does this training entail for officers?
Okay. it's significant and it's detailed, and I'll try not to bore you to death with it. But the basic premise is that, you know, when you think about it, we all have biases. And they're not necessarily evil or good, but they're biases, and we should recognize them. Sometimes, quite frankly, they are evil, but we don't want to target anybody or make anybody feel like they're under fire here. But it's really to explore the concept that we all have these biases and that they're born out of just where we grew up, who our family was, what experiences we had. And we get very blunt about race relations. And one of the more powerful things I've seen is an exercise where you can YouTube something that represents what I'm talking about here. It's a powerful thing. A white woman and a black man start telling their stories. And then about 2 minutes into their stories, they switch, and the white woman starts telling his story, and he starts telling her story. It's a powerful thing. So these are the kind of exercises we do in this training to just kind of wake people up to what the other folks in our society go through, what they see, how they filter the same event differently than they do, and recognizing that we all have those filters. And so it's really an exercise just to think about how we think and what they think, and to really respect human beings. And so all the training we've been providing in the last 6 years has been focused on unconditional respect, good working relationships, not heavy-handed policing, but the opposite, right? Thinking policing. So when there's a mental health crisis somewhere, we don't send the SWAT team, we send mental health experts, right? A great example of this working was last weekend, where we were able to help two people with a serious mental issue get to the hospital. Now, that's tough when they're carrying a shotgun, right? That could have been very bad in a lot of cities, and I'm very proud of our folks. They didn't send the SWAT team in. They didn't hit the house with tear gas and rush it. They waited. They waited 2 days until we had the opportunity to take them into protective custody and take them to the hospital. So I'm proud of that, and that's a result of this training.
So you found 3 more officers in the budget. Are there any plans to add those or any more officers to the average?
So the question was, we found enough money for 3 officers, might end up being 4, and are there plans to add those to community policing? Not at this time. Quite frankly, we created community policing, and the patrol division kind of took the hit for that, right? We pulled them from answering 911 calls to focus on this. Now, what I know and what happens in every city that does community policing is that the whirlwind slows down, right? The number of calls to 911 in those neighborhoods is going to drop, or maybe the better way to say it is they won't increase at the same rate as the rest of the city, right? So they more than pay for themselves in reduced calls. But this, what I'm proposing in the budget is to let's replace those on patrol. So they would answer the 911 calls. Yes?
Obviously, the community and the police department are trying to work together to become a more centralized unit. You have $700,000 being invested into community policing. Could you just describe maybe what that money will go towards?
Sure. It's really the cost of 6 officers and a sergeant who spend all their time focused on community policing. There are more officers that chip in, right? So there's a lieutenant that they report to, but he has other things he has to do in addition to this. So we didn't include him in that number. We're just saying here are the full-time folks focused on community policing. So there's 2 officers in each of our strategic plan neighborhoods, and then the sergeant that they report to. So that work is very powerful as well. I talked about what Glenn and Judy do. The officers do the very same thing. Their job is rather than answering 911 calls, you know, going call to call, they get out of the car, they meet people, they interact with them, and their job is to become the steward of that neighborhood, the guardian of the neighborhood, not the warrior, right, the guardian. And it's a mind shift change, and I'm very proud of these folks. These are amazing police officers. And so when they see 3 or 4 teenagers out after dark, their job is to hassle them. Hey, what are you doing out? You got school tomorrow? What? You know, give them a ride home, you know, that sort of thing. And you hear about these stories, and I love them, you know. I love it when they show up on Facebook, and that's how I find out about it, you know. When our officer picks up a family who's walking on Clark Lane after midnight from having been at the hospital where a relative gave birth. So they're walking home, and they pick him up, and they're thinking public safety, right? So how do I keep this family safe? So we fed him dinner and took him home. That's tremendous policing right there. Yes, Caitlin.
Last question I have. Maybe I should have answered this, but what do you mean when you say centralizing PIOs?
Oh, thank you. Yes, that's government and acronym. Sorry. Public information officers. So this is the second and sort of final step of creating the community relations department, so that we have public information officers in some departments, about six or seven, but not all departments have one. So part of the task of creating the community relations department is that we're going to centralize a lot of our communication there. So contact center will be a part of it for those folks calling us. We're going to do something that works really well. They're going to report to Steve Sapp, but they're going to stay where they are. So they're going to work for the department they work for now, but the reporting relationship will change. So you might think of it like an embedded journalist, where they're going to have, and the thing that happens over time that I'm very excited about this idea is, for the first time, I mean, you might be the only PIO in a department, so you've got no bench, right? If you're on vacation, they don't have a communication officer, right? So for the first time, you've got help, you've got a backup, right? If something important is going down, you're allowed to get sick. You're allowed to have a vacation. And quite frankly, everybody gets better when you have a team. When you get done with high school, it's okay to share information, right? We want you to cheat off each other. We want you to teach each other great techniques. And so by forming these groups, they can pick up tips and learn more, quite frankly, about the city rather than just that one service line. So that's what we mean by centralizing the PIOs. They won't actually move, but they will all report to our community relations department rather than the department they work for. Another way to think about it is they're kind of acting like a consultant. So their industry is public information, but they're consulting for Department XYZ. That's fair. Yeah. I've cut budgets my whole career. This one may be the toughest budget cycle I've ever gone through. Just the amount of headwind we had and what goals we had.
Play into the fact that there wasn't a ton of money in the budget, but so many things that you want to be able to do for the city. How do you make those tough decisions? I know you kind of answered a little bit, but in a general sense, more than public safety, there's so much.
Thanks for asking. One of the struggles we work through is that there are so many rules about each funding stream. So we call this the budget, but it's really a summary of 54 budgets, and it's a 700-page now summary. So we're not going to throw the detail at you, but it's there if you want it. But this is the summary. So each of those budgets has multiple funding streams, and each of those funding streams has rules. And by rules, I mean laws about how they can and can't be used. So that's very frustrating, for example, for a lot of folks, because quite frankly, we can't take money for electricity and spend it in police. We have to deal with police as police, right? So that's why our ballot approach can be helpful, and sometimes it doesn't feel helpful, but it can be. So you have to put a question on the ballot, do you want to fund this? And it's yes or no, but it's never, hey, in this complicated 54 budget scenario, do you want to fund this from here and that from here? We can't ask that. It's too complex. So the budget, it can be assisted by ballots, but in the process, we're looking more at what are the rules for each of those funding streams. Then we look at what is it we have to accomplish? What's the mission? What's the goal this year? And we get pretty creative about how we accomplish those goals. You'll notice if you read through that slideshow, there's very few of those ideas that are going to cost extra money. They're really taking the money we have now and using it differently. So we do that on a catch-as-catch-can basis, right? So where we do have money that can be spent differently, we think back through. We keep pretty meticulous notes on what the council has said in the last year, starting with their retreat all the way through to that moment, and we try to match what those dollars are to what we were hearing from council. So the goal is that the budget we present has been at least responsive to the things that they're telling us the community cares about.
Would you say, I'm not too familiar with budgets and all those things. Would you say there were cuts made anywhere? Maybe you even said that and I missed it.
Well, I don't know. I'm glad you're clarifying. And it's okay. We don't expect anybody to be a budget wonk. It's hard for us to be budget wonks, and we live it, right? Yes, there are cuts all throughout. So we cut $1 million out of the general fund departments, and that was a process we started 6 months ago. I asked every department director, you know, send me ideas from your shop that you could live with. And no one loves any of these, right? But tell me what you could cut up to 3%, so 1, 2, and 3%, and send me what you would be able to survive and stomach. So they did that, and I love that process because they have teams of people that work on it. So everyone that's doing this, providing the service, they come up with the ideas that say, well, we don't like this, I know, but if we have to cut, here's where we would cut. So then I review those with the finance department and others, and I decide whether, you know, in my view, the community is willing to accept those. And I didn't take every cut. One example is the downtown cameras. I think there was some news flow at one point that there was a decision to take those out. Well, it was never a decision. It was an idea in the budget cut process. I didn't accept the idea, and here's why. There was a ballot. The voters spoke. They want the cameras. It's not my place to defund them, so we're not going to cut that. Now, we're struggling to keep them working, frankly, because the technology's old now, 5 years. That's ancient in tech, right? And the company's shifting gears. They're not going to support it anymore. So I've thrown that problem at our IT shop to say, okay, keep them working, you know, find a way. So they have, and that's a beautiful thing. So a lot of cuts there. There's a lot of cuts just from we're doing fewer projects than we did last year. So that $14 million difference between last year's budget and this year's is mostly utility projects. You have to probably read every page to find them all, but there's cuts everywhere.
And the general fund would be this $440 million?
No, the general fund's about $88 million. Laura will give me the right number. So the general fund's about 20% of the total. And the reason we call it the general fund is because that money has the fewest restrictions. The council is allowed to spend that money anywhere it wishes. And so that's why we spend it on public safety. 2 out of 3 of those dollars goes to public safety. $82.9 million.
And for the most part, that sales tax, lack of sales tax funds because of growing internet sales would be a huge...
Yes, a massive impact on the general fund, yes. See, the biggest expense we have is electricity. That's 100-something million, right? All by itself. Water's 25 million. I'm ballparking it here. Most of our utilities are in the 25 million range. So they have dedicated funding, though. They have a bill they send you every month, and ratepayers fund it. So it's not taxes. It's you get a service, you're going to pay for the service. So that's the biggest, massive part of the budget. So only $82 million of the 400 and whatever it was, 19, is the general fund. I've got all day. Well, you know, I'm kidding. Looks like we're reaching a lull in questions. So if there are no more, I'll thank you all for coming.